This episode of Lawyers Tell All is brought to you by Law Firm Conversions. If your law firm's phone is ringing, that only means your marketing is successful. It's what happens when the phone is answered that will drive your success or failure. Visit www.intakeacademy.com and claim your free copy of Chris Mullen's groundbreaking book for lawyers and law firms that gets every call converting to become a profitable client, showing you the steps you need to take to ensure the right person is answering the phone and answering it correctly. Welcome to the Lawyers Tell All podcast, where Chris Mullins, the preeminent sales and communications consultant in the legal industry, shows you how it looks through lawyers' eyes. Here, innovators in the trenches provide powerful insights that help you connect with new clients, handle the sometimes harsh realities of the legal profession, and embrace the mindsets needed to succeed. Be sure to visit our website at www.lawyerstellall.com. And while you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now, lean in, tune in, and let's take a deep dive.
Hello, everyone. It's Chris Mullins with Lawyers Tell All and Intake Academy. And today, I'm interviewing Siobhan Jones. And Siobhan is going to tell you a little bit about herself.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I am the founder of Rainmakers Business Development Training for Lawyers. And that might be a little bit too broad because we have two types of lawyers in mind. We have market rate lawyers who are good networkers and connectors, and we help them to turn those relationships into revenues. And then we have the group that we're going to talk about mostly today, and that's our Access to Justice group. Those we help build volume businesses so that they can serve the lower end of the market where there's great demand, a great unmet demand. Mm-hmm. So that's the focus of what I do. And in addition to that, I am a practicing lawyer. I've been a lawyer for 25 years. Goodness gracious, I hate that.
Yeah, I know.
But I have an administrative law practice that I won't talk too much about today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about Access to Justice.
Fantastic.
So go ahead. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Just as an overview, most of you, most lawyers know that there is a segment of the market that has difficulty finding a lawyer. And that's what Access to Justice is overall. It's finding ways to connect the lower end of the market with legal services so that they're not in court representing themselves or not foregoing legal services altogether. So that's generally what Access to Justice is about. And it's kind of how I came to be interested in it. In my administrative law practice, I had a lot of small business clients. By way of background, I started out at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and then I went in-house at a large Fortune 500 company. And after that, I ended up at a boutique legal firm, a public finance legal firm. So I've had every legal experience that there is. And when I went out on my own, I started an administrative law practice serving small clients because I knew that the big ones had, you know, representation at larger firms. Mm-hmm. So these clients would come to me, though, too late. They'd come to me after they'd already entered a foreign market, for example, without a lawyer, signed documents and that they wrote themselves, and mm-hmm. they had created a mess. Ambiguous documents that both sides argued meant something else. And my reading of them, I couldn't tell what either one of them meant. Mm-hmm. So it was strange to me. And I wondered if I was the only one experiencing that kind of issue with, there's something on my screen. Let me move it. Okay, now that's better. Okay. But I wondered if I was the only one experiencing that. And so I looked around and saw that, you know, judges were starting to complain that their courtrooms were overflowing with pro se litigants on serious matters and impacting their child custody, impacting, you know, their housing and, you know, their finances. So not luxury items, things that they should rate spending some money for if you have it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the judges were kind of leaving their neutral role to kind of help some of these litigants in their courtrooms. And so that meant that this was a pretty big problem. And mm-hmm. so I said, okay, well, let me just get on the internet and do some looking around and see what I find so that I can kind of assess the size of the problem. And I happened across this organization called the World Justice Project. And it's worldjusticeproject.org, if you want to look them up. Mm-hmm. And I thought justice had something to do with the criminal justice system, which it has its own issues and probably needs a lot of help. But that's not what this organization is about. It's about civil legal problems. And the World Justice Project estimates that there are 5 billion people worldwide with unmet civil legal needs. Mm-hmm. So that's people, one person might have a couple of issues, an estate planning issue, some sort of problem with asset forfeiture or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. They could have many different issues. So you're looking at billions upon billions of legal matters that aren't being serviced mm-hmm. at the end of the market. And then I had to stop and say, well, why is there such an imbalance with the supply and demand for legal services? What do you think is, what, Siobhan, do you think is causing that? And as someone who's had a career in business, there were just two revelations that I experienced at that point. And that was that our approach, our current approach to serving the lower end of the market through pro bono mm-hmm. is not working. It's mm-hmm. some people don't even qualify for it, for example, and they have legal problems. Yeah. So that approach isn't working. And number two, the reason it's not working is because there's an absence of the profit motive. I mean, whenever there's no upside to no financial upside, that particular issue is not a priority. Yeah. And if you put a financial incentive into it, it'll get solved. Right. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, well, that's the problem. There's no profit motive here. And mm-hmm. so that is kind of where I am with Access to Justice. I got into it and said, okay, well, how can it be profitable for lawyers to meet that demand? And that's what I work on a lot, trying to make it profitable for lawyers to serve the lower end of the legal services market.
Well, so how does that, so tell me a little bit more about it. Like, how does that whole thing work? Get into it a little bit more so people can understand, what it is and how they can get involved. And
okay, so let's just, the way, let's just talk about kind of what we do now and the pro bono aspect of it and what's wrong with that method. So first of all, the first thing that's wrong with it is if every lawyer in the world spent 10% of our time on pro bono, I don't think we'd solve all 5 billion people's problems. Uh-huh. So the problem has gotten too big for what is now an outdated method of dealing with the lower end of the market. Historically, lawyers, they worked it, in private practice, and uh-huh. they had an obligation to either pay a few hundred dollars to legal aid to serve, to provide legal services to low income people. Uh-huh. And in those instances, there's means testing. So if you're a working class person, maybe you make $75,000 a year and, your housing takes up, 25,000 or 30,000 of that. Mm-hmm. And what you get done, even though these problems are important to you, there's no money to solve them, and you don't qualify for the free help. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the issue. And the other way was that lawyers would join groups like the ACLU or the NAACP, and they would handle big systemic problems through those organizations. They would provide free legal services to handle big systemic problems. But the problem there is what's a big systemic problem that gets some attention, but what about the individual with a legal problem that's not systemic? It's their own legal problem. Well, how are they going to, you know, how are they going to be able to solve it? So that's really, in my opinion, access to justice has become a middle class problem in that regard, because there's something available for the poor and there's something available for systemic. And of course, the wealthy can buy their legal services with no issue. And so what's left is the people in the middle who don't have a problem that anybody cares about solving.
Right. Yeah.
So, again, there are lawyers. I mean, my practice in administrative law, my average matter is $27,500. Mm-hmm. Not something that a big firm would be interested in. So there are practices, but think about it. You got to have $27,500. To me, it's not a lot of money, but to the person who's paying it, it is.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. Yeah,
it is. And so, you know, what you need to be able to make the services so that $2,500 is enough, not $25,000, $2,500. Uh-huh. And in order to do that, you have to have a large volume. So that was kind of the focus of my work, trying to figure out how to get that volume and then be able to serve that many clients. So that's what I teach actually in my access to justice track. But I don't want to go too far. If I'm saying something that's not clear, let me know so that I can, you know, put a little more.
Yeah. So, but I would imagine like doing this podcast, the hope would be to attract, you know, attorneys that would be interested in this, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely. So if I'm one of those attorneys, what are you going to say to me to help me get interested?
Okay. So who am I talking to, first of all? A consumer lawyer. And by consumer lawyer, I mean someone whose end user is an individual, not a business. So not business to business, unless it's a very small business, a micro business that you're serving.
So let's just say I'm a family attorney.
Yes.
Family law, right?
Yes. That's one of the obvious ones. But even others, for example, a bankruptcy lawyer, that's someone who's in that field, and a labor and employment lawyer on the plaintiff side, that's someone who's a consumer lawyer, estate planning, just normal, you know, child custody and family law, of course, immigration, what else is there? Real estate, if you're working with foreclosures, with asset forfeitures, with evictions, all of those, most practice areas have some aspect of it that's consumer, even business law, but my regulatory practice. If it's a family-owned business, a husband and wife-owned business, that's kind of almost consumer because it's their money that they're paying me with.
Yeah. Right. You know?
So if they don't pay me, they get to keep it. So that makes that have some sort of consumer law aspect to it as well. So pretty much I'm trying to think of practice areas, you know, not IPOs, right? But most practice areas have some aspect of dealing with the end user who's a consumer of the services.
Okay. So I'm that attorney, you know, one of the, I'm interested. What are you going to say to me?
Absolutely.
What happens next?
What happens next is I talk about what's the size of your practice, and how would you like to have an extra 100 clients? And if you add extra 100 clients, how would you be able to solve them?
Right.
And you're sitting there like, well, I couldn't possibly.
Yeah, I'm being like, I don't know about that.
I couldn't possibly handle another 100 clients, right? Yeah. And you can, because here's the thing about access to justice, making it volume plus technology equals profitability. So how do you get the volume? The volume comes from brand awareness, making the public aware that you exist. Mm-hmm. And that you're affordable to them, and then giving them some kind of idea that it's a good fit between you and them. Mm-hmm. So you have to do sales and marketing activities in order to get the word out about you and to get the particular people who sometimes have had the problem for a long time to decide, okay, now I'm ready to fix this problem.
Yeah.
And there's some skill set. There's a skill set involved there.
Well, let me ask you this one question though, before I forget, is why do I want to do this?
To make more money. You're in business for profit, right?
Right. Okay.
You're doing this to grow your firm.
Right.
These kinds of businesses should have at least $500,000 per lawyer. That's how much revenue should be generated if you have a proper volume business, about $500,000 per lawyer per year. Mm-hmm. It can be larger, but that's a realistic place to look for it to start. And so if you're making less than that as a consumer lawyer, you're not in personal injury, right? Because you're making so much money, you don't have time for this.
Right,
But if you're in a different area where you're working with the consumer and you're making less than that amount, then really within a year, you can get to that amount mm-hmm. with a proper volume business. So that's why
you interested. But the technology has to be really remarkable to be able to, you know, deal with the 100, right?
Yes, yes, the technology piece. The technology has to be infused into every aspect of your business.
Right. Yeah.
So from the sales and marketing to the client intake, to the client service, to mm-hmm. the administration of the file, the billing, and everything. And believe it or not, there's only four or five little software packages that are required to do that. And they don't cost a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you might spend on software for a year, $3,000.
Yeah.
Now you have to know how to use it. So you need some training to be able to use all these.
So
tools.
Do you folks provide, do you help me get completely set up with this whole model?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, soup to nuts, you know, you'll train me on the networking and the sales and marketing aspect. You'll point me to the right marketing agencies that make sense for me, or do you do the marketing?
We actually teach you how to do the marketing and how to use the tools to funnel the leads to you.
Right.
And we also teach how to, so with each software that's required, there's training on how to use that software.
Hmm.
So we get you a temporary user pass, and then we teach you during a session. And then you have to decide if you want to buy that software or if you think you can do it some other way. I would highly recommend just buying the stuff because it works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the ChatGPT that's going to get you in all sorts of trouble by giving you bad information.
Yeah,
this
right.
is all narrow. So each one of the softwares has a particular function and it's accurate at doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is very important for lawyers who want to protect their law license. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we teach during our program. And it's really when I started out, I tell you, I used to try to convince people that who really weren't outgoing or really didn't want to, you know, they hate the word sales. They don't want to be involved with any of that. I used to try to tell them, you know, if you do this one time, you never have to do it again. And that is the truth. Because I don't even look for clients anymore for my law practice. I left the law firm in 2009 during the Great Recession. I took my clients with me, and every client I have now is those people or people that they refer to me
mm-hmm.
or people that I've used them as references to get because it was somebody I knew that I wanted and they knew them and I asked them to be my reference. That's the only way I get legal clients now. And mm-hmm. there's enough legal work to fund this business. So, you know, I could tell people that and they go, oh, but they won't take the step. So now I don't try to convince anybody anymore. Either you're into this or you're not. Either you're someone who's a networker and you want to connect and I can help you to turn those relationships into revenues, or you're someone who wants, is good with technology or is open to being good with technology, and I can teach you to do the A2J volume business. And those are the only two tracks we have. Right now, most of our clients are from the upmarket track. Law firms pay for us to train their senior associates and their partners. And what we do with some of that money is get them to donate seats for our Access to Justice track. So we do that as well. But now, so I just focus on people who are open to it at this point.
Right.
And that gives me a lot less headaches trying to.
Yeah, because not everybody's a client, right? Not everybody's your customer, your client. You want to have implementers, go-getters. And it sounds like to me it would be a good model for brand new attorneys, that just got out of law school or, they're not really, they're still too.
Well, they're open to it. They definitely are, you don't have to convince them. But when you first come out of law school, you need to learn how to do something. You need to learn how to practice law.
Yeah. So
I recommend this for someone who has at least two full years of practice in a single practice area. Because if you're building a volume business, you need to have things in the can. And if if it's a motion, the motion needs to be in there and someone can make a little couple tweaks to it, your paralegal or something, and then submit it. You know, you can't be trying to think through what the legal ramifications are too much.
Right.
So you need to have at least 2 years of legal practice experience before you'll. Yeah.
So who are some of your ideal clients? You don't have to say the names of the firms, but like the profile of your ideal client for this.
On my Access to Justice or the other one?
Huh?
Right now, 95% of my clients are from law firms. They're law firm attorneys who are about to make partner, or they've recently made non-equity partner and they're trying to get to the equity side. And most of what I do for them is coaching. And I also teach them the business development skills that haven't been taught so far because they've been focused on billing hours so that they could get considered a partner. And now they're ready to go out and go to market. So I help them determine what kind of tools they want to use to go to the market. So for me, I do a lot of press. I do a lot of thought leadership. I do events, in-person events where I can mingle with people and connect with them and then follow up. But those tools are the tools that work for me. For a different person, the tool that might work for them is, they might just, for someone with a volume practice, they just might have a chat bot on their website. And then they sit there in the background and chat with a live chat. The bots don't do so well. But if you're chatting with someone who's on your website and you're answering the questions, you can convert people that way. So, there are different tools. There are probably about 25 different tools that you can use to engage with the public and try to get business. And then we discover which ones are best for each person. Your personality may lend itself better to different tools than others. Yeah. So that's part of what we do to get the leads through the door and to get some brand awareness. And then after that, we say, okay, how do you nurture those relationships once you have them? So are you going to have some sort of email list? Or is it going to be annoying? Are you going to be calling people, emailing people too often to the point where now they never want to talk to you again?
I know. But it's so like everything that you're talking about when it comes to like nurturing a list and building a list and maintaining it, all of those things, they remind me of just sales best practices, like old school sales best practices, like the insurance guy that will have a meeting room at the hotel and he's paying for dinner for everybody and they all show up and that's how he's building a relationship with them and they bring friends
Must be working, right? Because he wouldn't be spending that money on dinner.
Yeah, they still do it. They sign everybody up, right? Yeah. And The same thing for like, estate planning. You know, mm-hmm. they do the same exact thing still today.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And then, so that's the nurturing part of it. And then sometimes people have difficulty with the conversion. So in other words, yeah. You don't want to be romancing someone to no end, you know, with no aim in mind.
Right.
You know, so you have to be able to have a conversation with them and ask the right questions that get them to tell you what their problem is and discover what their problem is themselves and then decide to do something about it. And there's just, we have, these pitch notes and simulated conversations where we kind of go through, how do you get this person who has an issue and has budget, but isn't doing anything about it? What does that conversation need to look like
in order to
get them to move along? Mm-hmm. So those are the types of clients we serve. And the fourth quarter is when they're interested. This is when they're thinking about the future.
This is at the right time then.
Yes.
This is the right time. One of the things that we teach that is really helpful is understanding the real raw emotional pain mm-hmm. of that person, mm-hmm. like drilling down. So it's, understanding what you're really solving, the real problem, not what they initially called for. Like, mm-hmm. why did they call?
Exactly.
Why did they show up? Why mm-hmm. did they reach out? And drill all the way down. Okay, well, what happened? What was the event?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, know what that is, right? Mm-hmm. And get that and hang on to it and don't let go of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. You said it.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. It's hard for everybody to understand that though. For them to get that deep and to realize that that's really, really important. And it takes a lot of training for that, which I imagine you probably focus a lot on that kind of training.
Yes, we do. And we offer it in person and online. So either way, of course, it's cheaper online. And if you do it online, we give you a whole year within our platform. And there's also a lot of feedback. So if you're sitting there trying to decide, okay, what kind of nurturing tools am I going to use? What kind, maybe I'm going to do a blog, or maybe I'm going to do whatever you send that in, and then we'll say, okay, if this is what you're going to do, then, have you thought about doing it this way? Here's an example. One of my learners, that's what we call them.
Okay.
One of my learners, we were asking him to just describe his niche, because you can't market to everybody. You have to have a certain person in mind, just like you just asked. So, mm-hmm. and he said, he was a, what did he say? A general, no, it wasn't general. Everybody knows that's a bad word, but something like he was a tax, experienced tax attorney or something.
Okay.
And I said, yeah, but with whom does that connect?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if you're a tax strategist for small and medium sized businesses, they know that you're talking to them. I'm going to help you keep mm-hmm. more of your money in your company. You're going to be working with the CFO, or in some instances, you're working with the CEO. So that's someone who has responsibility for the profit and loss statement. And so you're going to help them to deal with it, and you're going to strategize with them so that they take actions that, that keep that number as low as legally possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so just words like that, for example, when I'm talking to prospective clients, I never tell them I'm an administrative lawyer. They don't know what that is.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm a regulatory lawyer. They go, oh yeah, I'm regulated. I have a healthcare. I have a clinic. My clinic is regulated. Okay. And so then we're talking a language that person understands. So it's about word choice is so important when you're communicating with someone, because you have a few seconds to say something that raises an eyebrow, and they go, oh, you're a regulatory lawyer, or oh, you're a tax strategist. And you need to say something that's going to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of work on that kind of stuff. So you get notes back that say, tweak it a little bit, try it like this. And then it's just a little tweak. But whenever people get that feedback, they go, wow, yeah, that was great. That was
yeah, right.
I'm
right.
like, okay.
Oh yeah, that one worked. So here's something like, and you might do this, but if not, it might be something interesting to do is the other thing that we do a lot with our clients and, you know, we call them students is the elevator pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So we make a really big deal out of that. So selling yourself and you just the old school elevator pitch, you got 30 seconds and, yeah. And it works really well. People learn a lot from it and get out of their comfort zone to know that you're not just selling whatever the firm is. You're also selling yourself.
Yourself. Exactly. More, even more than the firm. Because, exactly. Yeah, people hire lawyers. They don't hire, you know, they don't hire firms. Sometimes if that particular lawyer leaves, the business will leave with them because they hired that lawyer.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's the relationship that you're trying to that's the level of relationship you're trying to build to where you're that person's lawyer, you know, and they're at that firm because it has all the infrastructure there, but you know,
right.
You're their lawyer.
Yeah. If they feel like they know you, like you trust you, they're going to stick with you. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
100%.
Just being a problem solver. If as a lawyer, if you're known as a problem solver, then people call you when they have a problem, right?
Right. 100%. So, yeah, right, exactly. Also, how can everybody get in touch with you?
Okay, I would love for everyone to go to my website. It's called Sales, and it has the number 4 lawyers. And don't worry about the sales. It's Sales for Lawyers. That's the website. And if you are a consumer lawyer, we have an annual competition that's going on right now where we give away a training seat. And all the consumer lawyer has to do is fill out a little short application. And in it, there's a short, I think it's 5,000 words or less essay, where you just say how you help the working class, how your practice benefits the working class. And what we do is we involve potential legal consumers in the selection of the winner. Last year's winner was an immigration lawyer who focuses on reunification of families. So mm-hmm. hopefully we'll get a different discipline this year. And we give it away each year at our Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday winter tea event. I love to entertain.
I love
tea. So we, me and a lot of members here in Miami, I'm in Miami. We meet at and have a discussion of one of MLK's, one of his speeches. We're going to do the 3 evils of society this year. Last year we did Letter from a Birmingham Jail. And so we sit around and we talk about that because most of the people there aren't lawyers and they can think of ways to further justice in their own profession. So if they're in real estate, they can think of affordable housing ways. If they're in health, they can think of affordable health care. Mm-hmm. So just ways to make life more affordable to the masses. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what we focus on. So we'd love to have some of you apply. And we're going to, this year for the first time, we're going to put the discussion online. We have lunch first. And after the lunch, we'll do the discussion. And this year we're going to broadcast the discussion so people can participate remotely as their, that's the National Day of Service. So that can be your service activity for that day.
Right. There you go. Yep. That fits perfectly. Okay. Say your website one more time.
www.sales4lawyers.com, salesforlawyers.com.
Super, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
I enjoy being here. Thank you for having me.
You're absolutely welcome. All right, everyone. It's Chris Mullins with Lawyers Tell All. We'll see you again real soon. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to Lawyers Tell All, where Chris Mullins takes you on a journey with lawyers in the trenches who show you the realities of what it takes to succeed in this chaotic, crowded, ever-changing profession. Remember to visit our website at www.lawyerstellall.com and enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on Lawyers Tell All.